This is Laura Day. Today's date is November 15th, 1972. The time is 1 p.m. I will be interviewing Monsignor Forbes, pastor of St. Mary's Cathedral in Saginaw. Topics to be discussed are the founding of St. Andrew's Church in Saginaw, the present building, the history of its architecture, and education in the parish.
Well, my name is Monsignor Eugene A. Forbes. Presently, I'm pastor of St. Mary's Cathedral Church in Saginaw. My home parish was St. Andrew's on the west side. And when I was born actually in Carleton, Michigan. When I was 3 years old, we moved to Saginaw. And the homestead was on Hanchett Street between Congress and Union. So all my years of recollection concern the house on Hanchett, which was a mile and one-tenth from St. Andrew's Church. And I didn't know it at the time, but I must have been, when I entered school in about 1920-21, I must have been enrolled in the new school, as it's called. It was called then. I stayed there for my full 9 years, nine grades. I always had nuns teaching, one nun to a classroom. The size of the classrooms is kind of vague in my memory, but I don't think they would have been more than 30 pupils. My aunt was the principal at the time, Sister Mary Hortense. We lived a mile and one-tenth from the church, and I must stress how intimately bound up in our lives was the parish. I was an altar boy, served Mass for all the time that I remember, and we used to walk back and forth to school, and the parish was the center of our life, actually. There were picnics and school events and tremendous church ceremonies like the old solemn high Latin masses and altar boy processions and very solemn solemnities in the church on occasions like Easter and Christmas especially. And one of the high points of the year was always, of course, Christmas Midnight Mass, a beautiful choir directed by Mr. Tony Broger, a mixed choir. And for years, this was one of the best choirs in the city. Now, this goes back, of course, to the time when the west side was not very populous. I remember little jitney buses, streetcars they were called. They used to turn around on Rashan Street in Genesee. That was the edge of the city at that time. We considered anything west of Bond Street to be out of the town. Besides St. Andrew's, of course, there was St. Peter and Paul. And there was a traditional boundary line. Court Street was supposed to be the boundary, but I don't think it was ever settled in a document. St. Andrew's was the second parish in Catholic parish in Saginaw Valley. The first one was St. Joe Bay City, and the second was St. Andrew's. And this parish, of course, has been, as far as the west side life of the Catholic Church, it has been the most prominent. The first school was the St. Andrew's Academy, and this was founded. I remember the building standing there, but of course I never went to it. I went to the co-ed school, which was established on the corner of Hamilton and Monroe. But the academy was a wooden structure, and it was run by the nuns, I think. HMs. There was another religious order, different from the Mercy nuns who were running the school in my time. And as an academy, of course, it was a girls' school, I think even residential. But, of course, the girls came from the area. Now, I'm speaking hearsay and what I've read and what I know. I'm only familiar with the school as it existed on the corner of Monroe and Hamilton. Some incidents from my youth, I recall we used to cut back and forth through Bliss Park. And I remember quite a crusade of the KKK in Saginaw. They were quite prominent at one time. And they had a state convention here. And this is one of my early fears as a child, was the men in the white pointed sheets standing two to a corner on the Genesee in Michigan, directing traffic, and then their parade. And they had a little red schoolhouse. I remember one float. I stood watching this with my mother, and it was right where Union Avenue bumps into Michigan Avenue. And one of the parades was a little red schoolhouse being drawn by a team of horses. And I must have been about, maybe 7 or 8 years of age. But there was a rash of burning of crosses. And I remember in Bliss Park seeing a cross made out of wood that had been burnt the night before. And they had burnt one on St. Andrew's Steps, as I recall. And this, of course, in my tender years, was kind of frightening because I knew that, well, there's an enemy out there that was against me as a Catholic. And then we would hear rumors that a grocer down the street was one of them. And I thought this big fat man walking through the parade, in the parade, underneath his sheet, was possibly this man. Of course, I don't think it was, but it was a kind of a report going on in the neighborhood. St. Andrew's Church, of course, going back, as I say, so long, I'm guessing the present parish set up to be about maybe 1862. And initially it had a reputation of being a German parish, I suppose because the pastors were German. The founder was Father Vander Heyden. He was actually a Hollander. But then they had a succession of others, and I remember Father Maus, M-A-U-S. He was the one that was there in my time, and he was a German. There were quite a few German Catholics up around North Carolina Street and in there that probably gave the parish that reputation, although it didn't last because it was really a territorial parish. As I say, anybody in the neighborhood north of Court Street was technically supposed to be a member of the church. And it was quite a class church. They had quite a few well-to-do people there. We kind of looked down at St. Pete's on the other side of Court Street because, well, there was a kind of a foreign-speaking element there. They had some I assume, laborers. Of course, my dad was a laborer, too. He was a tool and die maker. But the reputation St. Andrew's had, especially in Father Moss's time, that it was the class parish of the city. Now that I'm on the east side at St. Mary's here, which is actually the third parish in the valley, over here I think people had the same attitude that this was the class parish too on the east side. But as I say, on the west side, with there only being two parishes, there were both of those parishes, St. Pete's to the south of Court and St. Andrew's north of Court, had a large congregation. I would not know the population of St. Andrew's Parish, but I am assuming even back in those days there must have been 1,000 families belonging to that church. There was nothing between St. Andrew's and the Tittabawassee River. And to the north, the nearest parish would have been St. Joseph Carlton on Shattuck Road, and then, of course, St. John's Carlton, too. But inside the city, it had a very large territory. But here again, as I recall, the territory was not too much extended. Personally, we lived on Hanchett, which was closer to Michigan, two streets off of Michigan. But I remember spearing frogs, for example, in Deindorfer Woods, which is now, of course, all inhabited. And I remember taking my bicycle to Liberty Beach to go swimming. This was a little, kind of a resort thing. At the foot of the across the Tittabawassee River, but this was all farmland in my time. I don't recall any houses in there except some farms, and the city itself proper clustered between Bond and the river. I'm just looking at this questionnaire now. Because of St. Andrew's being the first parish in Saginaw County, it's got the name of Mother Parish of Saginaw. Reference to Father Nouvel, N-O-U-V-E-L, the Jesuit father. This refers to a missionary, Father Henri Nouvel, a Frenchman from France who landed in Quebec and was sent as a missionary to the Indians. He was in the Saginaw Valley in 1675. This is a little known fact about Father Nouvel. He came here with some companions and said Mass on the banks of the Saginaw River. We're not exactly sure of the place. We have a monument we've erected on Ojibwe Island to commemorate this fact. He was looking for Chippewa Indians, and the story is told in the Jesuit Relations show that he went up one branch of the river and then had to come back, and that night he set up camp. Which branch did he go up? It's hard to tell. Maybe he started up the Shiawassee when he wanted to go up the Tittabawassee to find these Chippewa Indians who were then encamped around, we figure, Mount Pleasant. We did research on this about 10, 15 years ago, and there is no question about it that he is the first, let's say, non-Indian to be in the Saginaw Valley area. The architecture of St. Andrew's Church, I don't know too much about this. The building is a kind of a semi-Gothic, I guess. The brick is very hard. I understood once that it was the same brick that was used in the pavements of Saginaw, very hard vitrified brick. The stained glass windows are of German origin, but I would not know from what part of Germany. Stations on the cross are unknown to me. The organ was there in my time. It was a manual type, and I think later they electrified it. The big altars were donated by one of the better-to-do parishioners, and these are kind of a cast plaster arrangement. They were quite expensive, and I remember when they were installed, there was a lot of excitement about them because they were beautiful, but quite ornate, and I noticed that they have left them there even in spite of the new regulations about the liturgy. They have put an altar of sacrifice in front, a small altar, and then they use the big ornate altar in the back as what we call the altar of reposition. The question about the churches paying taxes, of course, the Michigan law is that if the property and buildings are used, owned, and operated by the church, then they're not taxable. We don't pay taxes on the church building or the property that's used or the school. But if we have fallow land that's not used, then we pay taxes on it. Our bishop insisted upon this. St. Stephen's, I think, had something like 9 acres, and it was lying fallow there, and he insisted that unused property be put on the tax roll, and this is always cool. We do not pay taxes here at St. Mary's. We're only on 3.15 acres, and I don't know about St. Andrew's either. They probably have maybe a couple of acres. But when you use the property, like for off-street parking and playground and so forth, naturally, according to Michigan law, that would not be taxable. Now, I'm talking about general taxation. We pay all special assessments, sewer taxes and pavement taxes and all the rest of it. But the general tax is not levied against church property in Michigan, provided it is owned, used, and occupied for church purposes. A question about Catholic education in the St. Andrew's Church. You can see that right back from the old St. Andrew's Academy days, right on through until the closing of the school about 2-3 years ago, Catholic education was a very vital major apostolate of the church. The parochial school education, of course, got its impetus in the United States from the Third Council of Baltimore, where all parishes were told to, where possible, have their own parish school. And the reason, of course, was the then secular influence of the public school. The Council of Baltimore feared this hands-off attitude on religion would be detrimental and encouraged all parishes to have their own schools. The trouble with St. Andrew's, of course, began when St. Helens and St. Stephen's were established. St. Andrew's is right up tight against Saginaw steering gear in the river, and as a result of this, they're like on the end of the fan that branches out. And when the bishop established St. Helens especially and St. Stephen's further out, these two parishes lobbed off a great deal of property from St. Andrew's. Then the older homes, naturally, like between Michigan Avenue and Bond Street, where many of them made over into apartment buildings, and the young people moved out into the newer territories. So actually, the enrollment in the school, the grade school and the high school, was dropping because of the fact that the people that lived there were not the ones that were the young families with the children. They dropped the high school finally, and for lack of enrollment, basically, although the new high school is one of the finest built buildings in the city. It's very well done. It's got the ceramic tile and the aluminum windows and the whole business. But the grade school, of course, to keep it going, they kept taking people in from all over, non-Catholics and so forth, trying to build the enrollment up. But then, simultaneous with the problem, came the lack of vocations. Religious orders were losing, they were not getting recruits into the convents, and they were losing some of the nuns that were in the convents. So your teacher, your nun-lay-teacher ratio began to climb, so that, they'd have maybe 50% nuns and 50% lay teachers. And then because of the parish being constricted in size and income and families, they couldn't afford the lay teachers' salaries. So I think there are two factors about Catholic education, at least in St. Andrews. Number one, the fact that they lost a lot of parishioners when St. Stephen's and St. Helens were established in 1951. And then besides this, the young people moving out, so there wasn't a supply of children available in the parish neighborhood. And then thirdly, I think the fact of the lack of vocations, especially in the Detroit Sisters of Mercy, who staffed that school. They were one of the hardest hit orders in the matter of vocations to the order. I don't think that the people's attitude changed toward Catholic education. I think they felt it was desirable, but the mounting costs, when you weigh, for example, tuition costs of $450 a pupil, and you guide a secular education in the public school free of charge, I think the people just were not able to bear the increased costs. One of the difficulties, of course, St. Helens had a large grade school, was a principal feeder of St. Andrews High School, and they established a policy there of not paying any parish subsidy from the parish to St. Andrews. In other words, they put all the burden of the full tuition upon the parents of the child. And the year that went into effect, of course, people that were under a lot of other expenses, like school fees and transportation and so forth, when they came to the question of providing the whole tuition for their child, they just were probably not able to do it. I'd like to summarize this by saying that as far as I was concerned as a youngster, St. Andrew's Church occupied my whole, religious life, my social life. This was the center of our activity. We had gatherings there, our games were there, meetings were there. My mother was head of every society that they ever had. She started in the PTA, and she had been a teacher before she married my father. She taught in Carleton and Zilwaukee, and became very active in St. Andrew's Church. As I say, she became head of the Alder Society, eventually the whole, right, every society they had. My father was not quite so active. He worked in a factory. He put in his 8 hours a day, and we were middle class, middle class. We were seven children. I was the oldest. My mother's sister was principal of the school. She was a religious Sister of Mercy, and she became the principal of the school. So we were quite, as a family, very closely entwined with the life of the parish. All of my sisters and brothers went to school there. I left after ninth grade to enter the seminary to become a priest. My youngest sister, Rita, after she graduated from St. Andrew's High School, she joined the Mary Knoll Nuns, and she has been in the Philippines for 10 years. And about the last 5 years now, she's been the novice mistress of the order in Mary Knoll on the Hudson in New York City. One of the big problems with St. Andrew's decline and fall, I feel, was the establishment of St. Helens. Maybe it should have been put farther out of the city, but the property was bought by Bishop Murphy. He bought two sites, St. Helens and St. Stephen's site on Malzahn. St. Helens was on North Charles. He bought them just before the war, so I'm guessing maybe 1941. Well, nothing could be built during the wartime, of course, and the land lay just fallow as empty pasture. But then after the war in 1951, he was able to get them organized. And from the start of these two parishes and their attraction of drawing the younger people, I think this marked the beginning of the decline of St. Andrews especially. They were hemmed in by St. Pete's to the south, and I guess to the west, you could say, by St. Stephen's territory, and then again more to the north, St. Helens. And being uptight close to the river like that, there was no way of expansion, no way of keeping the parish going. And I would think today probably they're down to about 400 families, and many of these are elderly people. Perhaps they depend on transients too, just who come there occasionally to Mass, but it doesn't have the parish life and vitality that is needed to keep a school going and a full operational parish plant. I don't like to blame the establishment of St. Helens because it was certainly necessary, and it's too bad it wasn't didn't start functioning in 1941 instead of waiting for the 10 years to 51. In retrospect, I feel that one of the reasons my parents moved from Carleton to Saginaw was to get near the Catholic Church and the Catholic school. Though a mile and a tenth may seem a long way today, we walked it, we kids, and then we carried our lunch and we came back home when school was over about 4 o'clock. And since this was the reason my parents moved into Saginaw from Carleton, the church was the attraction. The mile and a tenth seems quite a ways, but this was the house that my father was able to locate, and he could swing the mortgage and so forth. I recall in later years we used to have these tokens to ride the streetcars and then the buses, but generally we walked in good weather. The mile and one-tenth was not much more than 15, 20 minutes away from home, and sometimes we got rides with people later on, but generally, we walked in the morning and walked back at night. St. Andrews got to be considered a fairly large parish. I remember, well, back in the 30s and 40s, they had one and two assistants, so that meant it was a pretty moving action-type parish with a pastor and two assistants. There were a lot of activities going on, and I'm vague on the number of families, but I'm sure that in its prime it was well over 1,000 families.